There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live at the Elder Dragon Riddle podcast. This is your host, Igor, as usual. With me is my co-host, Niksha.
Good evening.
And we have actually brought a special guest with us. Could you introduce yourself, special guest?
Hello, guys, and hello, dear listeners. My name is Marco, but I'm widely known as Johnny Crow or Dr. Elsa Grout. I'm Igor's friend and, I'm a member of his playgroup, and today I'm going to talk to you a bit about Dragon Control in EDH.
He's the annoying Kefnet player, by the way.
Sorry.
You might have got a kick out of this. But anywho, Niksha, how has your week been?
It was so-so. I got fed up with Pirates in Standard, I did some Commandering, and that's about it.
Alright, nothing
special.
Not upset
over the story, but fine.
I mean, you can always bitch about story, but, you know.
I know.
Any Commandering over the weeks that happened with you?
Well, I only played KNT, you know, the pretty standard stuff, and I decided that with all these 1v1 Commander tournaments, I decided to go a bit off flavor ninjas. So I'm going to actually try to make a competitive 1v1 Sig River Cutthroat. I'll keep the ninja theme, but I'll be adding cards I normally wouldn't, like Counterspell. So yeah, we'll see, because I got tired of like switching cards in it. I have quite a few cards I constantly keep switching when there's a 1v1 or something like that. And the only card I'll be going to be the Sword of the... For some reason, that's not...
I mean, I don't think anybody would actually mind, but still.
Yeah, but the rule.
Yeah.
So, KNT, doing some fabulous work as usual. I upgraded their mana base quite a lot, so...
By that you mean not all lands coming to play tap?
Well, no. Got a few fetches. Some shocklands, yeah, you know, the good stuff.
Yeah, good, I'm proud of you.
I mean, most of it will come tapped, but by turn 4, I should play a basic, and then you know, anything to tap after.
Yeah, I can imagine KNT being on 1v1, they just stand there, and what does the mono red do if it hasn't killed you by then?
Yeah, that's why KNT will never be a 1v1.
Of course, but 1v1 is a kind of rotten format in my mind, so, you know.
Well, we could always just... tell them, say that we're exist, but that would maybe not like that, so...
I mean, our shop isn't even going by the actual French, because you have no sideboards and things like that.
I know, but hey.
But hey, Marco, do you have a commander of the week?
Oh, well, as always, I'm playing my Kefnet, I'm having fun with it, I'm working on some new stuff, I'm working on Kes Doomsday Control and on Tassigar Seasons Past, but that's just in development right now. I'm kind of finding builds for each one of those I'm comfortable with.
Any fun plays you had with Kefnet last weekend?
Oh, well, it's rubbish in 1v1, and I've actually beaten someone at 1v1 at, casual games. We couldn't assemble a pod, and we just threw some 1v1 games for fun. And I won after my opponent went into land Soloring Signet, and I was kind of proud of that.
Wow. I mean, when your opponent's trying to smack your face and you just combo out, it kind of goes like that.
Well, yeah, but when it's land, okay, Soloring... Oh my. I know why this is banned in 1-1. Signet.
Oh, you serious? Soloring is a fair card. It never did anything wrong.
True that. Well, anyway, standard Kefnet stuff. It's not like I'm not excited about playing Kefnet. It's just that I know it so well that, I don't know, it just feels equally fun every time I play it.
Yeah. Well, for my commander of the week, I guess, when I was playing against us, against her dinosaurs with Team 9 Tana that I assembled, My opening hand was like, okay cards and two lands. I was like, okay, let's play with this. And for like three turns, I got nothing. I got no lands, no mana rocks. And I still managed to win that because Kokori was the MVP. Hey, when she was smacking my face with dinosaurs, I needed some way to actually, you know, recuperate. And Kokori allowed me just that. Just, okay, this will buy me like 3, 4, 5 turns. Just, you know, get back into the game. And then slowly I grinded out. She wanted to kill me, you know, in the middle of the match, but I managed to win, and that's all that matters. Also, Tendershoot Dryad, a really, really, really good card.
Yeah.
I still haven't managed to play it in multiplayer, the Dryad, and I really want to. Just to get all the value. Until it gets killed really, really fast, I guess.
Shh, think positive.
Also, a fun play happened when I played Yisen on turn 3 in one of the other games. I'm like, okay, now I'm going to get, you know, a couple of mana dorks or something like that, maybe still in Safekeeper, and then test play Stranglehold. And I'm like, well, this Yisen and this Birthing Pod in my hand just are really going to be really good this game, aren't they? And of course I couldn't draw any of enchantment removal I had. So that game I died pretty fast.
But it was epic, probably.
Oh no, it was just stupid dinosaurs smacking me stupidly in the face and me dying horrible to them.
Yeah, that works for me.
Nothing actually epic, just the sadness.
Yeah, that's why Stranglehold is a fair card. Actually, a fair card.
I mean, it is. For 4 mana, it is. It would be more fair if you didn't set each player, but I really want to get another Stranglehold, just to put it in a couple of other decks. To have that, and Cat Jesus, and even Mind Sensor in play.
Why do you hate me?
I mean, just don't search your library and you'll be good.
Yeah, you're playing, I mean, tutoring is over.
I mean, you're playing mono blue, you're going to draw those cards eventually, so...
I'm not sure that.
But anywho, did we have an actual topic this week, Niksha? Are we just spitballing around?
I think we're spitballing around, but we did say that we might have a topic, so let's go with that.
So, Marco, why did we actually call you here?
Well, you called me here to talk to you about Jogger control, in EDH, of course.
That is kind of your expertise.
Well, it kind of became my expertise because I love control. I'm playing control in every TCG I ever played, and I tried to make it work it in EDH. I didn't see many Draugr control decks running around, and I was just like, hey, let's try to make one, and it worked.
So, what would you say that the average pitfalls of a normal control player in EDH?
Well, there is an inherent problem with one card for one card problem solving in EDH, because if you waste a counterspell or a targeted removal on a threat, let's say player A counters or destroys player B's threat, player C and D both virtually gain 2 cards because players A and B both lost a removal or a counterspell, and player B lost a threat. So it's very hard to actually keep on countering and destroying stuff while staying on the top and retaining real control of the game.
Mm-hmm. And give us some examples. How do you actually play control in proper way?
Well, first thing one has to learn if they want to play a real Draugr control is threat assessment. Threat assessment is of critical importance here, and many people, my language, screw it up. And hence, those control decks simply don't work. There are 3 kinds of threats, generally, that you want to counter, or you don't want to counter. First kind of threat is the kind of threat that will kill you immediately, on the spot, be it 1v1 or multiplayer. You want to counter it if you can, no questions asked. Second kind of threat is a threat that has incremental value, that won't kill you outright, but will, over time, will create such a tempo gap between you and the said opponent who played that threat that you weren't able to catch up. You want to counter that or destroy that if you're in position to do it. If you have a single counter that might save your ass against another player, you might let that pass. Or if you can kill them before that incremental value actually matters. But if you have A, multiple counters, or B, don't have bigger threat looming over your head, you want to counter it. And the third and least important kind of threat is a threat that you can counter for tempo gain. For example, they play their six mana bomb tapping out, and you can counter it for 2 mana using a single counter spell and using your remaining mana to draw cards or further plan. But those kind of situations are really sketchy in EDH, and because as I said, the virtual card game to the remaining two players is too big to actually go into that often.
And how do you actually spend the other removal? Not counter spells, but, you know, bound spells, pongifies, etc., etc.
Well, if you're playing mana blue as I am, this isn't anymore about draw control, but playing mana blue problem. In blue, my removal is relatively bad. Let's face it. White, green, black, they have real removal. I have to go by. I remove what I have to remove to stay alive, and B, I counter stuff. I use my removal when I have to on key cards. Let's say Capsize. Capsize is actually a great removal, and if you remember my problem with the Draugr control in EDH, a 1-for-1 removal where my third and fourth opponents are happy because I lost a removal. Capsize doesn't have that problem, but it costs 6 mana. And I have to think hard before I actually remove something, because that 6 mana expenditure might come back to haunt me. So, A, we have a quality problem here, and B, again, threat assessment.
Threat assessment is a really tricky thing. We just did a podcast, the last episode was the threat assessment, if I remember correctly. But I've seen a lot of people killing like random 5/5 that's a deck in their face that just has, like, say, trample. And they let other things just pass.
Okay, let's come back to my 3 tiers of threat level. This is the third tier of threat. Threat that actually doesn't do anything that you can probably counter for a tempo gain. In EDH, you actually never want to counter it because 2 reasons. First, again, you wasted removal. And your opponent, one opponent lost a mediocre threat, if threat at all, and your remaining 2 opponents are celebrating. But if you let it go, actually, you're relieving some stress off you, because other 2 opponents have to worry about that threat. If you're playing a real Draugr control, you must have a way to stay alive. Not just for outright counter everything, you have to have some kind of pillow fort effect to keep you alive. And if you do have that, you can save your counterspell here and actually gain something off it, because you will force your third or fourth opponent to deal with that threat. And you, A, virtually destroyed that threat. You made your opponent waste a removal, and you didn't actually do anything. You just played your deck well.
You were speaking about gaining tempo by countering stuff. It's not something I'm going to mention in the realm of EDH, but I used to think of Remand as like whatever counterspell, because it doesn't actually counter it. But with me playing Modern for quite some time, I learned that Remand is actually a really good spell.
I mean, you can use it even in EDH, I think. Remand.
Well, you can, but outside of Storm builds or CDH, yeah, it doesn't do so well. Well, these 3 tiers are greatly different in 1 versus 1. In 1 versus 1, actually, before turn 6 or 7, you want to counter something if your opponent taps out, basically because if you can, let's say, counter a thing and then play a draw spell, you're actually doing pretty well. But in EDH, that's usually a bad call, because usually on turn 5, some mediocre threat like 5/5 trample can't kill you, but in 1 versus 1 on 20 life, it can, and it's worth countering.
Yeah, and if they tap out to cast one card and you remembered it, it was almost a time walk for you, because you
expended... No, it's literally a time walk.
Well, they got a card, so yeah, from that perspective, they get to draw a card, but you didn't waste anything to remove their turn from the game.
And you're allowed to play one of the most broken effects in the history of Magic. Drawing for a cards. Low price of them drawing a card.
Oh no! But there is the threat assessment, but how do you actually win with Draugr? Because that's the thing that people most suffer. They put a bunch of counterspells in their decks, and a bunch of removal in their decks, but how do they win?
Well, in EDH, this is a hard truth most people have hard time coping with, but here it is. In EDH, control decks usually must play some kind of combo finisher, because in multiplayer, without actual way to impose clock on your opponents or to play actual stacks strategy, you can't really win with a 5-5 flyer or anything. You have to win in a single turn sustainably because you can't keep countering everything that goes your way. Jogo control usually wins like this, at least in EDH. First, you have to, as I said, make sure you stay alive. Second, you have to, through good threat assessment, control the course of the game. Not countering everything. You counter crucial stuff that endangers you and intentionally let by stuff that hurts your opponents more than it hurts you. You pile up advantage, and after some time, you can A, cash in that advantage, aka make unfavorable card economy plays that you actually want to make to profit long term. Let's say removing threats that are, just removing threats in arenas and whatnot just because you can. And you can use that advantage to actually go into combo because you'll have enough resources, enough mana, enough counters to protect your combo once you decide to go off.
By the way, your assessment that most people wouldn't like it. I think people are slowly shifting around on combos, just worldwide.
Well, people actually don't like combo because then they think combo is a cheap win. But in truth, most combos are relatively easy to interact with, be it because A, they're fragile on its own, or B, their pilot is inexperienced. First, to play a good combo deck, you have to be experienced pilot. You have to know A, how your combo works, and B, if you were on the receiving end, how you would counter it, and hence C, what do you do to prevent your opponents from interacting from your combo. So actually, it's not just, hey, I win because I have these cards. No, a good combo player assembles those cards in a particular moment, choose to execute it when his opponents are least likely to interact with it, and last but not least, they have some kind of protection. Did you ever see me comboing out without actually saying, look people, I have counter spells, please bring it on. And when people would try to interact with me, I actually have counters.
You're always, I have this, and this, so try.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the time, about 50% of the time, I have a combo in my hand, but I'm not sure enough that it will go through. I'm like, wait, if I wait for a turn, can they can they kill me? They probably can't. But is it likely that some of them will step out, or B, that I will join to more counters? Yes, then I'll wait. If you go for a combo kill, you're shooting to kill. I'll try. No, you have to shoot to kill. You have to play your combo and win a spot.
You finish the thought.
Because if you fail at that, entire table will target you and you will die instantly, pretty much.
The thing that most people are seeing when they're playing as combo deck is basically I put down, let's say, Kikijiki, I put down Pestermite, you all die. But what they're not seeing is the background of it, how much the person has tutored, drawn cards, set up the situation, set up the defenses and all that, made a good assessment of what the hell does everybody have on the table and what could they have on the table.
Exactly that. Another example from our games. If you've noticed, about more than 50% of the time I'm comboing off, most of you guys are tapped out or short-run cards in hand.
Oh, I know.
And I'm intentionally waiting for a moment to combo out when you're least likely to interact with my combo.
And there is mostly one person that's trying to deal with your bullcrap, and that's me, because, you know.
Yep, that's you, and you're doing a pretty fine job.
Most of the time, and then?
Well, you're doing what most players fail to do. You actually want to stop me from comboing out. You actually aren't scared of a combo when it arrives on the table. You actually think he might have a combo. I know what to expect. I have to anticipate it and stop it before it happens. I have to prevent it. Most people fail to do that because if a combo player, a good combo player, is comboing off, you're already dead. If they're good, they probably have you where they want.
And to segue a bit, fitting partly into this, is one of the things we should also discuss. Things that get you card advantage, like Rhystic Study. Pro tip, people, always pay the one.
Oh yeah, always pay.
If you can't help it, pay the one. Mystic Remora is a different thing. You most often cannot pay for that.
And Remora is hard to maintain, because for Remora, if you actually play Remora turn one, you actually can't do anything through your first period. So Remora is kind of fair.
Playing Remora on turn one is more of a more competitive thing to do, because a lot of people will be playing their non-creature spells on turn one. For more casual metas, you should play Remora on like turn three, something like that. When people start cultivating.
Well, that depends on the hand. For example, if I'm early mulligan and I draw into just two lands in Remora, I'm keeping that hand because people are going to play rocks.
More competitive the meta is, then you should sooner let it down. But if it's more casual, I think turn three is most of the time fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
But talk us more about those things that actually gain you card advantage. Which should people focus more, not just in mono blue, but other colors like blue, red, bug, and things like that. What should they keep their eyes out for?
Okay, to actually play a good draw control deck, first, as I said, you must have ways to keep yourself alive. I don't care if it's Pillow Fort cards like Ghostly Prison, Propaganda, or whatnot, or you have a big commander defending you like Mike Affnet or Tessiger or anything actually big enough to lock and kill Hate Baron, something of that size. You have to stay alive, first. Second, you will have to counter stuff. You will have to play counter spells. So you must play draw cards. You must have... I'm not talking cantrips. I'm not talking a single time draw spells like Glimmer of Genius or Harmonize. I'm talking constant influx of cards. Probably Phyrexian Arena is probably the best example. If you're drawing extra card every turn, you can afford to go into bad place card economy wise, because you're actually having more cards than your opponents. So if you go into minus, you're on the same level instead of being above them. And last but not the least, you have to keep your counter spells if you act and removals if you don't have actually anything to remove, because every minus you avoid is relatively a plus. If you keep a card in your hand and the threat gets dealt with, you actually have a plus there, because instead of going into minus one to remove it, you're keeping it at zero and the threat still got dealt with. And people usually don't think about it when they think about card advantage, but it's really, really, really important to think over how are you using your counter spells and removal.
There is another thing that we should mention from Drogo perspective, from control players perspective. You don't have to remove everything.
Well, I hinted at it a few times during this.
Yeah, but let's mention it bluntly. Just bluntly. Bluntly that you don't have to counter everything. Well, yeah.
I already told you about threat tiers. If it isn't tier 1 or tier 2, let's face it, no matter how scary it is, it isn't a priority to get rid of it. Because A, if it doesn't kill you, it can be scary as hell. I don't care. If it doesn't kill you, or if it doesn't stop you from winning, it's not relevant. Period. One. And B, scary things will usually bait out removal and general hit from other players. That's implicitly good for you. You have to learn to let things pass. Recently, I had a friend that decided to build a Barrel Mono Blue Counterspell Tribal, and he had problems playing it. And he asked me for help. Of course, I decided to help the guy, and I figured out, hey, he was countering literally everything that looked even remotely scary. We talked it over, and it turned out that, well, he actually could let most of threats, air quotation marks, go by without actually losing anything.
For example, Lone Gisela.
Lone Gisela, a perfect example. Lone Gisela is a scary thing that A, scares other two players just as it does, just as it scares you, and they are as likely to remove it as are you. Especially if you're pretending, oh, listen guys, I don't have a counter spell, or I won't counter it, say whatever you want. And B, if they actually play Gisela, okay, and they want to do Axis shenanigans like another damage double or whatever, you still have your counter spell you can counter it with. And last but not the least, remember that Pillowfort factor I mentioned. If you have, let's say, Propaganda, Ghostly Prison, Kefnet, or Tessigor or whatever, you aren't a good target. So actually, it's not just that you don't have to prevent threats from hitting the field or removing them. Some threats might not be targeted at you. It's very often that people just say to me, look, don't counter it. You're not my target. He is. I'm just like, okay, because A, I don't care that it's that technically my opponent got a threat. That isn't a threat regarding me. That's a threat regarding my two remaining opponents.
Yeah, I know exactly who's the person you're talking about, so I'm just grinning right now.
It's the best example, but not the only one. It actually happens pretty much every time I go down at the LGS, because people are scared of counter spells, and that's
That's the thing we need to talk about as a person who's playing against the Drogo deck. Don't be so scared of counters. Try to bait actual counter spells.
That's the flip side of what I was about to say. You can actually use the threat of counterspells themselves to A, prevent things from hitting the field, and B, to actually make your opponent's threats work for you. People down at LGS, let's say just I'm playing it down at the LGS and I counter something randomly. Another player plays a threat, and they just say, look, I won't attack you, but just please don't counter it. Just a regular teamy thing. Okay, I let it by. And as I already mentioned, that's inherently a plus for me. If you want to actually beat the Drogo control, what Igor just said is actually a very good idea. That's a threat assessment on the other side. You have to look over your threats and think, which one of these things is A, the scariest, or most likely to bait out the counterspell, and B, if I make that player waste their counterspell, which one of my threats will have the biggest impact long term?
We had actually that situation yesterday, right?
Sure, you go tell them about that one.
Basically, I had an Armageddon in my hand, but I also had Enemy Dead with Linvala, the first one in my graveyard. And I was like, I could play Enemy Dead on Linvala, on the Karma Guy to get Linvala, but Mark would most likely counter that because his captain would just be a 5-5 beater, which he doesn't want. He wants to gain actual advantage from him. So let's cast Armageddon and see what happens, because if he lets the spell go, I'm okay because I still have mana floating, I can cast my Enemy Dead anyway. And if he counters the thing, he will tap out and I will still manage to, get Linvala out. And lo and behold, I cast Armageddon, you negated that, and I was like, okay, let's do this. I got Linvala, put boots on her, and basically, that was the beginning of the end for you, that game.
Actually, yes, and that is actually a good example, because you did just what I described. You actually made me use my counterspell, because even if I didn't, Armageddon would actually put me in a pretty bad spot for quite a few turns. And I actually had to counter it. And if you do it again on our next game night, I would probably do the same.
Yeah.
And that is actually a good counterspell baiting. You have your plan, you pick the card that is scary and will likely use up one of my counterspells. You will literally bait it, and then you will capitalize on it the most you can.
Nick, do you have any observations about this whole things that we've been talking about? You've been silent.
I know, but it's notes. It's Drago magic. Even though I'm not against it, I don't really have anything to say because I don't play that.
I mean,
and
what,
I'm just annoyed playing against
it. Where do actually your frustrations from playing against it stem from?
Well, mostly standard.
Which one?
What do you exactly hate the most? That's what I'm asking.
What I hate. When I'm playing in standard against Drago control. There is no such thing as passing something through. Nothing gets passed. It just doesn't. I remember good old times of Time Spiral. I think that Control was at the top at that time, because you had Teferi, and Teferi was basic, you know, Teferi.
You're talking about the teachings deck, right? Mystical teachings into Teferi.
I really don't
and other
remember.
Things.
I just remember the rage I felt whenever I saw somebody play Teferi, and I was like just sitting there completely helpless. The thing I can't really describe it fully, but right now I don't mind Drago control if I'm not alone, because I know that he'll probably counter something from somebody else. But I don't play with people like Marco that often, so they mostly counter just about anything, and that's like it kind of annoying. And that's why I have a one card combo deck, and that's Karador.
Oh my god, yeah.
So it's basically I cast Primal Surge. If you don't counter it, okay, I go off. Also, speaking of removal, Sudden Death is severely underrated.
Any card that removes things with split second is kind of underrated. Besides
anything with split second is kind of underrated, period.
Yeah.
Split second is actually really powerful, so if you got split second cards...
Mm-hmm. Even
especially against struggle players, because it pisses them off.
we actually had a discussion over this last night when we were at our friend's house. Basically, sudden shock. Is it okay to play in Commander or not? And my argument was actually it's really good because it kills all those stupid dorks and utility creatures that you really hate, but they're never going to kill in combat.
Yeah, but it's kind of restricted to those kind of... It does kill Kiki Jikis, though. Very
efficient. Yes.
And we have a Kiki Jikki combo deck in our meta, so...
Yeah, Sudden Shock is actually a card.
Oh, it kills so many things that you hate. I mean, it kills most of my decks, first of all. Because, you know, power toughness 2 or less. It kills a Laboratory Maniacs. Look at it that way.
There's an Alesha deck. There is a Tim Nantana. There is a...
Doomsday?
Riku Kikijiki combo deck, and there's gonna be a Kes Doomsday deck. Come on.
Basically, yeah, in our meta you can just kill anything, but even in normal metas, you can kill Elvish Archdruids that we spoke of before the show. You can kill those kind of things.
I'm just going to digress a bit and say that in Modern, it was really fun killing Sakura Tribe Elders with Sudden Shock, playing against Valakut. And I was like, I second response. No, you don't.
Oh my god. That might be the actual filthiest use for that.
And
you call me evil.
And Delvers, you know, way back when Delvers were actually a thing.
You mean when Victor Time and Treasure Cruise were legal?
No, I mean Delver of Secrets.
Yeah, that's the thing. When Treasure Cruise and Victor Time were legal in Modern.
They weren't Modern for a long time.
But when they were legal, Delver was at all. Because guess what? Casting Ancestor Recall and things like that in Modern is kind of okay.
And of course, let's not forget about Infect, which cries to Sudden Shock.
Oh, yes.
And against Burn, who can kill their Monastery Swift Spears and they can't.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad it doesn't actually prevent triggered abilities.
Yes.
So there's actually a way to counter split second cards, and that's counter.
It is. And, of course, Morph is a thing.
And Morph.
Void Mage Apprentice, right? Counters the spell. Just straight out.
Yeah, because Morphing doesn't stack.
It's a special ability.
It's a player ability.
And that's a silly... Do you know the actual reason why they did it like that?
I don't know the exact reason.
Basically, they were playing... In Standard at that time, you actually had Shock. That was a legal thing.
And they didn't want Shock to just kill your...
Yeah, I'm going to unmorph this, let's say, Exalted Angel, because that was the only morph creature we were playing in Standard, let's face it. They didn't want to be like, I'm going to morph this in response, I'm going to burn it. It'd be like, oh, feels bad. So that's why they did it like that, and that's why you have all these wonky interactions with the stack. Or lack of, I guess.
So yeah, that's my...
So basically, your two senses screw Drogon control.
Not really. If people are going to play it, then by all means, do what you want. I mean, if you're a pirate.
Nyxia has one thing that is a trump card against the Gong control. Nyxia plays all the weirdest cards ever and just like, do I let this go or do I counter it? What the hell is this card?
Also ninjas. Ninjas can't actually be countered.
Oh my god, yes.
Oh, ninjutsu, hoho!
No, this is so true. I played against some of Nyxia's decks, and when he plays something, first I have to read it. That's the first problem. Then,
twice.
Is this a threat? Does he have a combo with this? What does it do, actually?
What is this card?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why one of my favorite cards is that, I can't remember the name, but it's in Karador. The 4-mana artifact that lets you pay 2 mana and discard your hand to counter a non-creature spell.
Null Brush,
yeah. It's, people just like, look at it and they're like, okay, I mean, he'll discard his hand, but the thing is, I don't care.
You see, but my reaction is like, he'll discard his hand. Why does he want to do this? Oh, look, his general. Oh my god, no.
oh, it's Karador, okay.
Yeah, basically, make your general free. Almost. But also, wait, one of you. One, yeah?
Just one more thing. Is Karador banned in 1v1?
I have no idea.
I don't think he is.
Okay,
I
don't think. Okay, go on. I'll just do a quick check.
What I was gonna say, one of Nyxia's specials is also Mana Maze.
Actually, makes Reaper King uncountry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not really. You can still counter him, counter the voids.
Nyxia, do you wanna explain, Marco, what Mana Maze is, if he doesn't know? Or our actual, you know, listeners?
Mana Maze is a 1 and a blue for an enchantment that states the following. Players can't cast spells that share a color with a spell cast that turn. So, with the last spell cast that turn. So, if you play a green card, can't cast anything that has green. But if you play a green card and then a blue card, you can cast anything that's any color except blue. So you can go green, blue, green, or you can go green, colorless, because colorless doesn't have a color. So playing it in Reaper King is kind of fun, because scarecrows are mostly colorless. And Reaper King can't be countered at that point. And if you have a way to flash in Reaper King, you can actually block people from playing cards. Oh, wait a minute. That just gave me a...
Oh my god, what now?
So...
Nyxia had one of those again.
So, I'm going to have to play the Haida Rhymewind Master, aren't I? Because I can bounce Reaper King for 2 mana, and then I can flash Mirror, casting Reaper King, and then blocking people's like that. But I'll also Seedborn me. Okay. This sounds strangely appealing. I have to
say. By the way, this is how most Nyxia's decks come to be, by the way.
Yeah, by pure luck. Or, you know, just thinking about stupid shenanigans and then actually trying to do them. Except the Chupacabra in Tron. I will never put a Chupacabra in Tron.
1 week later.
10 minutes later.
No. Yeah. I did the math. It's bad. It just doesn't work. Even in a mono black Tron, I'm not going to play with Chupacabra in Mono Black Tron, because I'd still rather cast a Solemn Simulacrum.
Huh.
I mean, yeah, killing stuff is fun, but if I ever get my hands on some collected brutalities, that's the...
Yeah, either that or, you know, have Eugene and stuff. If that version of Tron plays actually Eugene.
Well, he is good, but I wouldn't main deck 4 of them. Also, I don't have 4 of them.
I was going to say mostly because you don't have them, right?
But yeah, I'll try to divert from Tron incoming, but I still have to ensure the blue engine works. For which I'm going to need some counter spells.
Haha.
But enough of this diversion. So where were we on the Drago control?
We were talking about the actual removal, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there are actually a couple of hard removals for like mono blue. I mean, Pongify
well,
is one
they
of them.
Are. Well, they are, but compared to black and black, green, and white, they're pretty lackluster. I mean, sure, Pongify and Rapid Hybridization are actually pretty sweet.
Also, Reality Shift.
Yeah.
Reality Shift.
That's the Fate Reforged.
Yep.
Yeah, that one's a good hard removal, and B, Infinite Combo Part in Tasigur.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
You know that one, don't you?
I don't.
Explain him.
Okay, with Tasigur, once I hit infinite mana, I can basically put my entire deck in my grave and put each and every non-land card from my grave to my hand, okay? Then I can cast Beast Within, actually infinite number of times, because every time I cast it, if I have infinite mana, I turn something into a fish beast, ends up in my grave, Tasigur recurs from my grave to my hand. I destroy every land, every non-land permanent, everything, and then I use Reality Shift on a token to exile it and put a card from my opponent's top to their battlefield. Then I return Reality Shift from my grave back to my hand, and I do it on their morphed card. I exile it, and they put another card from their top on their field. I keep doing this infinite number of times until I mill them out.
And it even goes around the Eldrazi titles, so because you're not actually, you know, milling them.
Yep.
You're just manifesting cards.
Okay.
That actually sounds like a mixture deck, to be honest.
Almost. It needs to be enough to work.
It needs to be a bit jankier, but we're getting there.
Well, actually, Tasigur has multiple reliable ways of hitting infinite mana, so...
Yeah, you see, but we don't want reliable ways for mixture.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah, that reminds me of my evil plans for modern land destruction, which is not Ponza.
There we go.
I just don't want to play Ponza as a land destruction. It's just, it's not reliant enough. I mean, if they kill my land, I lose the game. So, I'm still thinking about, do I want a Jeskai or a Grixis? Because I can steal lands and I can bounce land. And with blue, I can also, you know, once they have little to no creatures and some lands, I can tap their lands with Frost Titan. And they can't get rid of Frost Titan anymore. Black has Smallpox, of course. And it has Gurmagangler. And for the Jeskai option, I have Lightning and the Numot the Devastator.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know. But again, the Jeskai version requires flagstones, and I...
Yeah, I feel it there. Kind of pricey.
But yeah, so that's a long...
Anywho,
talking.
My kind of thing.
I mean, Marco hates fun in similar ways that I hate people having fun, but he just goes a different way about it.
About what?
People having fun.
Oh yeah, you actually don't let them have their lands, have their mana, you don't even let them dream their dreams. Their dreams hit the stack, they watch it, and they watch it go from their stack to their grave.
Oh no, I let them have fun, aka having some lands, and then no more. And one of the best fun is, okay, they have managed to get, like, 3 mana to get the Cultivate out. But Cal Jesus is still standing on the field. Just like, yeah. No, you're actually not gonna get there. And just another sidetrack, I'm sorry for this, but I've noticed that people in online have actually become more softened to the idea of Stax decks. Because guess what? Stax decks are actually stopping all those stupid combos people hate.
Well... Yeah, A, they're stopping combos, and B, Drogo control that actually works in other formats has problems in EDH because, well, card economy. Stacks just say, no, not one of you gets to play stuff. I don't even have to counter it. So if you really want to play control in EDH, Stacks is a legitimate option, not because you might be an ass, but because it's, no offense, easier to play on the card economy level.
Oh, definitely. It's much easier to deny everybody for having cards than just, you know, counter and counter and counter.
Well, counter, as I said, demands very good threat assessment, and B is actually tricky card economy-wise, so those two are huge problems Stax doesn't have to deal with.
And since I'm a bad player, I choose not to, you know, actually play the skillful plays, I just blow everything up.
Yeah, that works too.
That works.
That's a good way for, you know, for us bad players.
Yeah,
screw it.
That's the way I play Super.
No, you're not bad player, you're just a fightful one.
Nick Shen, his Super Friends, is notorious for not being, you know, a bad deck. It's an actually good deck. But, oh my god, does it glow. It's boring for Nick Shen. And then everybody else. And it's boring when the pilot of the deck is super bored.
It reminds me of said that it me when I played the Fiend Hunter draw, actually draw control. And by draw control, I mean cause the game to be a draw.
With what again?
With the, not the Fiend Hunter, the Bounty Vampire.
Oh yeah, with Mathas.
Mathas. A Fiend Seeker, not Fiend Hunter.
Yeah, Fiend Hunter is a different thing, yeah.
I know. But let's
It used to be a deck about this summer, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
How come I didn't see it?
He played it like a couple of times. He was like, okay, I did my thing, this is boring. Because the point of the deck was to make the game into a draw.
That sounds like Nisha.
Yeah, but he did a couple of times, he was like, wow, this is actually annoying and boring.
Oh, but you know what is a fun commander?
What?
The Grand Calcutron. I actually made the deck and it's really fun. It's actually fun for everyone.
Do you have it actually sleeved up or?
Yes.
Well, next time we're playing, then you're playing that.
I definitely. I don't care. You can see that Armageddon coming.
That makes Armageddon a bit more fair. I'm surprised they didn't make Armageddon, but a suspend version.
So, we wrap up this?
Yeah, if you ask me, yeah. Do you have any parting thoughts about Drogo Control, Marco?
Well, I think we covered most of the important stuff. I just want to say that Drogo Control is significantly different than it is in 101, where we're talking EDH, but it's far from powerless, far from useless, and at least for a pilot, far from unfun.
Mm-hmm. You just need to actually do a lot of repetitions, a lot of thinking about your plays.
Well, there are key differences when comparing it to 1v1, and one has to grasp them. Once you do that, it's not the same, but pretty much like 1v1.
Hmm. Any other thoughts, Nixon, for you?
No, not really. Play whatever you want, like I say. Already.
Play whatever you want, Nixon's gonna jank you out either way.
Or die trying.
Mostly die trying, but...
Mostly.
23% of the time, it works 100% of the time. That's basically Nixon's decks.
Kind of.
Yeah. But you can find all the information in the show notes, Cardsphere, Twitter, Facebook page. So get in contact with us if you want to talk about basically anything.
Marco, for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me on the show.
This has been fun. This has been long in the making, but we finally made it.
Curses upon ye technology.
And this has been the Elder Dragon Turtle Podcast. It was still the first and the only. And this has been episode 61. And as always, the Emperor protects.
Hoorah.
Bye, guys.